Welcome, Spartans, to Mission Debrief. We're playing every mission of the mainline Halo video game series in chronological order, discussing our experiences and sprinkling in a little lore along the way. If you'd like to play along and have your thoughts read on the show, email us at podcastevolved@gmail.com or drop us a tweet at podcastevolved on Twitter. We'll be playing Spartan Ops episodes 6 through 10 from Halo 4 on the next episode. If you like what you hear and want to support the show, visit Podcast Evolved on Patreon. This episode, we're debriefing Spartan Ops, episode 1 through 5 from Halo 4, campaign. I'm your host, Colin Perkins, alongside David Arnold.
Hello, everybody.
And Krista Brown.
Okay, so maybe Palmer's not so bad after all?
Told ya.
No, she's pretty bad, but whatever.
How dare you?
Last mission... Chief and Cortana loaded a nuke on a broadsword and chased after the mantle's approach, flying just below the shields, just below its shields through slipspace. They emerged outside of Earth and reconnected with the UNSC Infinity. However, the Didact activated the Composer and began his revenge by digitizing humans in New Phoenix. Our stoic super soldier and failing AI companion fought their way through the Forerunner ship to confront the Didact. Cortana sacrificed herself, giving Chief a chance to take out the Forerunner powerhouse and blow up the Composer. Cortana and John 117 say their goodbyes inside a blue bubble. Chief is back? Question mark. Current mission is Spartan Ops, episodes 1 through 5. So led by Captain Thomas Lasky, the UNSC Infinity heads back to Requiem 6 months after the composing event at New Phoenix. The mission, reconnoiter and clear out the Covenant occupation that's been poking around the Forerunner shield world ever since Del Rio ran home. Fireteam Majestic is introduced to Spartan Commander Sarah Palmer and then quickly sent to the surface of Requiem along with numerous other fireteams of Spartan 4s. While conducting various missions, Fireteam Crimson turns up a mysterious Forerunner artifact that transported one of the UNSC's top scientists down into the shield world. There, Julim Dama, a.k.a. the Hand of the Didact, forces the human scientist to access some very mysterious Forerunner tech. So the date of the game, we're fast-forwarding a bit from Halo 4. We're now in February of 2558.
Six months,
absolutely. Yeah. Couple things, a correction from the end of the last episode. I said read escalations. Don't read escalations.
Oh, shit.
You didn't read escalations.
I read the whole thing. Oh, God.
Colin, why?
Because the escalations takes place right after episode 10.
I think it's initiation you were thinking of, right?
I think I said initiation and escalations. And initiation is fine because that's about Spartan Palmer's kind of story and some of the early Spartan 4 stuff. So wait on escalations till we're done with Spartan Ops, then you can go read that cool comic, and then initiation, if you want to read that at any point, you can go get some background there. I wanted to provide a little overview of what Spartan Ops is, but we're not doing kind of the regular overview because Spartan Ops is part of Halo 4, and it was built into Halo, at least this first season was built into what Halo 4 was and what you purchased. The campaign itself that we're playing was meant to bridge the gap between Halo 4 and the future games, you know, as we know, Halo 5 exists. The first season was included in Halo 4, like I said, but you needed Xbox Live in order to have it. And then future seasons, they didn't really discuss future seasons, but this was, pitched as season 1. Future seasons were most likely to be paid DLC. However, the mode wasn't really well received, and we'll kind of air some gripes here in a little bit about the mode and maybe some constructive criticism, that sort of thing. One of the notes that I found interesting is that Halo 4's player base, I think it was like hours played or something like that, dropped below what Halo Reach was at the same time, 5 months after release. So people dropped off Halo 4, you know, and that's like everybody plays the campaign and then it's multiplayer time. People played the multiplayer for a little bit, but then they kind of went back to Halo Reach and then other games shortly after. So that's part of the reason that
that wasn't really Spartan Ops' fault, though. I mean, the Halo 4 multiplayer, as it was, wasn't very well received.
It was a little weak. Either.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but I think this was built as a way, like, if people were playing Spartan Ops, you know, maybe over and over, if the player base was strong, it would have made sense for them to then, you know, hey, like, we have a good player base, let's drop another season and do it, you know, paid DLC, that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's supposed to be like a firefight. It's basically firefight mode with story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which, right, on paper, sounds amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm all about.
The second season, essentially what happened, I don't know if there are probably quotes out there, but the second season or future seasons then ended up being what Escalations is. So all that story, and who knows, they probably changed it a bit, but that story, the future story, the gap that's filled between Halo 4 and Halo 5 is in that comic book for the most part. There's also some of the other books that we've talked about that are also covered on in there as well. But like, there are some story threads that are kind of told here are then finished up in the comic book series. There's 24 issues of that, so check that out. There's lots of different ways to get that digital, or there's some collections and things like that.
It's such a shame because the cutscenes in Spartan Ops is so great. I'd love to see Escalations just in that style of cutscene.
Mm-hmm. I would watch that. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't a huge fan of Escalations, but I would watch it. That'd be a pretty dope way to see that.
There was one note I read about how the animations for Spartan Ops, the way that we know them now, they were actually supposed to be more like motion comics.
Yeah, I had originally. That in the trivia as like, that's an interesting thing. Yeah, it's an interesting note that they were supposed to be motion comics.
I'm glad they didn't.
Yeah, and they went full in.
Yeah, me too.
It's the best thing about it. Like,
the graphics are great.
Yeah.
And you can sit down and watch the entire, all the cutscenes, and like, you get a pretty good, I mean, I think it's a complete story.
It is.
And that's something that we'll talk about in a little bit, is like, you know, because what we're doing as players, we're playing as a fire team that's outside of the main story. They mention the fire team that we're on, but it's not super critical, all the little things that we're doing to drive.
We're just doing chores.
Forward. Lots of chores, yeah.
It's basically just chores.
Other things to note about Spartan Ops, the loadouts. There's loadouts, which if you played, you'll notice. Those tie in with your multiplayer progress. So I remember, like, you had to unlock certain things. Certain guns and all that sort of stuff that tied in with your multiplayer progress. Oh, I'd forgotten all that. Yeah. So, like, you had to get you unlocked, like, the third slot or something like that. And then the different armor abilities, I believe, that tied in with your Spartan rank.
Oh,
but in Master Chief Collection, they took that all away and just kind of gave you everything right away.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And then you can customize your Spartan as well. So the armor that you use in multiplayer then carries through into Spartan Ops, which is cool.
Very cool.
All right, so let's just get the elephant out of the room. Let's talk about why this mode is frustrating. Our constructive criticisms as much as possible. David, why has this mode been kind of a chore for you to go back to?
Man, I failed to go back to this. I know Krista put in all the hard work, I'm going to say up the front.
Ooh, David,
for this episode.
Ooh.
I had the easier job of the cutscenes, which is the most positive thing, but the premise of this was so interesting to me. I remember at the time of they're taking the multiplayer maps and kind of building a story into them and putting kind of wave-based thing. Okay, we knew it wasn't quite like Firefight, but it was something else. And on paper, that sounded perfect to me. Like, yeah, give me some of that. Those maps are beautiful. I want to play that. I liked the idea of loadouts and customizing and armor and being in like a custom Spartan again, like you kind of wear in Reach. I mean, that was kind of interesting to me. So I was like, yeah, definitely, this is going well. But it just did not work. It's so grindy. It plays kind of like a multiplayer, so like you have infinite lives, so you can set the difficulty like in campaign. But soloing it is absolutely made to be played as a fire team, and is probably very good. Probably even way better than we realize if it's played cooperatively. I've never managed to get more than two people into a party. I don't think with Spartan Ops. We didn't really try very hard, to be honest.
Chris and I played a little bit here and there. Yeah. It was better.
I'm sure playable wise is better because some of the missions are just bare bones and they're just not fun. Straight up not fun. Some of them you kind of want to die so you can get ammo back for your weapons because sometimes they just put you in a place where just you have nothing and it's just not fun. There's just so many missions that are so grinding. There's just not fun. The core gameplay is still Halo 4 and that's fine, but some of them, the later ones which we're not in, definitely get way better when they introduce a lot more vehicles, they introduce a lot more kind of power weapons and stuff. So I think they took on board some of the criticisms. I think it all didn't come out at once, right? Wasn't there like a second part that came out later?
It came out immediately, I think.
It was weekly, yeah, and then yeah. there was a big gap, I think, yeah, kind of around the holiday season.
Yeah, there was definitely a big gap. And then
it picked back up. The second half picked up, I think, a month or something like that after.
I remember talking about it, and possibly even on this show back in the early days.
Probably.
The second half picked up way better.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it's because based on the feedback from the first half of the bare bones mm-hmm. and everything like that. So that to me is why it didn't work. It just got so grindy. It got so repetitive.
Well, it was grinding for it with no rewards either.
Yeah,
yeah, there really wasn't any rewards.
You weren't working towards like a higher number or like more kills of
it didn't even
watchers
give you experience.
To give you anything. Yeah.
Like it gave you no experience for Halo 4, your Spartan mm-hmm. there or anything like that. You couldn't get like a special armor set or anything or a special emblem. There was just no reward for actually doing it. And I think
which is weird to say because like in general, we like Halo 4's gameplay, right?
Oh, yeah.
But then, you know, we were frustrated by fighting Prometheans, and there's a lot of Prometheans in here. But there's just, like, too many enemies in general, right?
They don't scale based on your team, so the mm-hmm. you're going to fight the same amount of enemies whether you're one person or four people.
Yeah.
Which really sucks.
It gets very overwhelming. And that builds into the kind of the repetitive nature. It's, you know, every time you do something, then it's like, oh, here's another load of enemies to, you know, to stop you from doing the next thing. And then you clear them out and then you get another waypoint. And there's story around that, and we'll talk about that. But it just feels very just repetitive in general. And it's like, here's another wave. And then because like we said, it's supposed to be like a firefight, but it just doesn't feel like the firefight mode.
It's not rewarding enough.
It's not rewarding enough, and then when you die, there's no really consequence. The reason that you die is you're overwhelmed, or you just want to get more bullets.
Yeah, pretty much.
Anything else, Chris? I have a couple more notes I can go through here.
Let's say if there was a death penalty, this mode would be unplayable because people wouldn't do it.
Yeah,
it'd be hard. Yeah. So I think you would need a really good reward otherwise. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I feel like this game, like, especially the first season suffered because someone was making this while they were making the whole game and everything.
Sure.
Like, this was probably their last priority, and you can kind of see mm-hmm. it in season one, and then once they release the main game and they start working on season two, you can see a little more effort was poured into that.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting, actually, to note that.
Yeah, that's probably what happened. Like, that's my best guess as to what happened. I don't know. They use the same map over and over and over and over. It's like the same. Like, we have 50 missions? No,
there's 5 times 25. Yeah.
Yeah, we have 50 missions total. So we have 25 missions in this first half of the season. And I probably saw the same map like 5 or 6 times, maybe.
Oh yeah, they definitely reuse it.
Like
they reuse each map a couple times.
Yeah, you see the same map at least. Like mm-hmm. you're gonna see the same map at least twice. Like,
well, and that's part of the challenge is they're dropping you in a multiplayer type map and then building a campaign story around it.
Yeah.
And so there's not really a sense of progression as you're just kind of moving back and forth and around this map.
Yeah,
it's like going down a new corridor.
Yeah,
and
I feel like
doors and linear
progression.
Yeah, there's no progression to it.
And yeah, well, you kind of think that maybe those maps were multiplayer maps, so they're built for quick rounds of Halo 4 multiplayer. That mm-hmm. you spend way more time on them in Spartan Ops than you would in multiplayer. So get bored of them way faster and you repeat them
over and
too
over
much.
And over.
So,
like, and like some of them have some lore around them. Like one of them's like a research facility that you keep coming to because stuff keeps happening. Yeah, I like that a lot.
I like the lore behind the multiplayer maps because that makes it very mm-hmm. interesting. Especially because like...
The Valhalla one was really cool.
Yeah, yeah. It's just like what these things are. So in Halo, you'd always get a little blurb of lore about the multiplayer maps that would kind of mm-hmm. set the tone for where you were painting or where you were fighting. That was always really interesting. Of like, this is a outpost installation for this or blah, blah, blah. So getting like a story around a specific part of a multiplayer map kind of really grounds those maps and maybe even those fights that you're taking place, like makes them interesting. And I do like that Halo's multiplayer has been kind of canonized for like...
the war
zones. From 4 onwards. Like, yeah, like the multiplayer of Halo 4 is like war games taking place inside Infinity's like holodeck.
And
like,
they even say it like in one of the cutscenes. She says, we could do a couple more rounds of war games. And Blasco's like, no, we have to do it now.
I like that.
I like that a lot too.
Yeah,
cool. The maps, though, they're reused, but in some cases they're played off as a different location.
Yeah, which is,
you know, it's like, hey, wait a minute, this is the same map and it's supposed to be somewhere else, or you're referring to it as somewhere else. So there's a big disconnect
and
there.
It just gets confusing after a while, and like after a while, like, you become so numb to it you don't even care.
Yeah,
like it's hard for me to, like, I'd get through halfway through an episode and I'm like, wait, what the fuck's going on here?
I know, because you really have to, they explain it in the dialogue, but when you're shooting and there's so much going on, it's hard to pay attention to that.
In a
to
bad
that one
way
line
too.
Of dialogue, yeah.
Also, the length of each episode, like, they're like 15 to 20 minutes. These aren't like short, like, quick 5-minute rounds or something like that.
If you're playing solo, yeah. It'll take a while.
Yeah, it's like, oh my goodness. Like, some of them are shorter than others, but for the amount they put out there, there's no need for us to be in a map more than, like, 10 minutes, I'd say. Because these are supposed to be quick ops. Like, boom, 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 boom.
The other frustration I had right away, and I remember playing this mode right away, is that Crimson, they never really explain Crimson.
Oh, you know, no.
They have the opening cutscene, and they introduce Majestic, and all
the
of a sudden,
team
everybody goes down to the into the planet, into Requiem, and then they drop you in, and then Palmer's like, hey, Crimson, what's up? And they're like, wait a minute.
We're what?
What about Majestic people? Like, what's going on here? So they don't explain who you are as a fire team, and they don't explain this Jared Miller guy at all, who's the other guy that talks to you.
The handler, yeah.
Yeah, your handler.
There's
and then
just
a lot of other characters.
There's a big disconnect between the story that they're telling and then what you're actually doing in Spartan Ops.
That's well, one it's of intertwined. It's intertwined, but it's
loosely.
Just not explained well.
It's very loosely.
They give references and words and places and names.
You like,
but, like,
you find stuff and then they show up in the cutscenes, but like you don't get to see your fire team at all or anything like that. Like most of the stuff you're doing doesn't actually matter half the time. Like maybe one out of the 5 episode missions you play in an episode actually matters to the main story.
Yeah.
Like the other
one, it's either the first or last one.
Yeah.
Because then it ties in directly with the cutscene that happens either plays before or after it.
Yeah.
So, like, you have these filler episodes in the middle then, which get kind of like, what's the point? And some of them are just so monotonous.
Yeah.
Again, we're harping on too much about the
Well,
I know,
no,
but,
I think it's good to air this, because then we'll have it all out of our system.
Yeah.
Because there is a good story to be told that we'll talk about. What do you guys think if they threw the bots at you? Kind of like in Halo 5, where you had 3 bots on your... So
that
you had a full fire team of 4? That would have made the missions more manageable, right?
Yeah, and it would have felt a lot better too. Just like,
because then you would have seen your other fire team.
Because
right?
Like it makes no sense when you're playing solo, because they're talking
to
you as
revived?
If you're a fire team, and it's just like, no, I'm just a dude. I'm just the best Spartan ever.
Right. I mean, they were obviously definitely gearing up for this to be a bigger mode than it was and more popular. And I don't know, can you matchmake into Spartan Ops?
Nope. That's another thing. Like, why is there no matchmaking?
If you can matchmake,
there's no matchmaking in Halo 4. There's no matchmaking in Master Chief Collection. It doesn't make sense. Like, if there was matchmaking, this would be way more playable, and it would be way more fun, and a lot more people. Like, even if you had a team of 2, you'd be able to find a team of 2 more and then have a full fire team.
Even the Master Chief achievements are, like, difficult enough, because, like, you got to finish this thing on... There's a solo legendary one. I think.
Oh boy!
And it's like redonkulous. I know there was a, I know there was a cheat that you could do for a while where if you just loaded into the mission and exited, you would get the accolade for finishing it.
Like,
I know lots of people who did that, just loaded in each mission and back out again, and they got the achievement for playing it on legendary.
Dang.
Solo.
And some of these are defense missions. So like, if you're one dude doing a defense mission, you're on legendary. Like, you might as well not play.
Now, technically, because obviously you get infinite revives, you can grind it out, but there is just
It's a point that can be destroyed, because there are points that can be destroyed and then fail the mission out, it's like there's absolutely no way.
Yeah, that's just not funsies.
It's not.
So two other criticisms from my standpoint is most of the missions end with just clearing out all the enemies, and that's kind of the firefight aspect of it, but there's no way to like run past an encounter and just hop into the Phantom or the Pelican, whatever it is. You have to sit there and clear everybody out, and again, especially playing solo, that gets to be a grind. And then there's no boss encounters.
Nope.
You
boss encounters are just
there
more
is
dudes.
There is one that we'll talk about, but it's like you kill this guy and he's just like on another elite. And it's not that great. Anything else before we... So let's go down to positives, unless you guys have any other gripes that just kind of you want to get off your chest.
No, I think I've said my piece.
A lot of constructive criticism. They could have done better with the mode. And you can see when we get to Halo 5, and we can talk about now, like Warzone like took a lot of learnings, I think, from this and implemented into Warzone.
Honestly, it's such a natural progression that it's almost weird that Warzone doesn't have an overarching story to it, but it's literally just Spartan Ops. It's like way better Spartan Ops.
Yeah.
Oh, Halo 5's Warzone. Yeah, it is simulations.
Yeah. Well, and it has all those things that we talked about, boss encounters, matchmaking, you know, like
rounds.
It's a better mode of progression. For sure. And I'll also say, like, you can put skulls in Spartan Ops, but none of the good ones. So, like, the ones that really don't, they make the game more difficult as opposed to, like, more fun. We got, like, birthday,
you can do grunt birthday party.
You can do birthday party and maybe acceleration.
Scarab gun.
Might be interesting. But that's what I mean. Right. Like, I know there are achievements tied to it, but they could definitely have given you, like, infinite ammo or something more enjoyable.
Infinite ammo positives. Would have been real fun.
Positives. Cutscenes. Cutscenes are great.
Oh, so amazing.
Cutscenes are
It's the
amazing.
Highlight of this. Like,
yes.
Mm-hmm. It's one of the best things ever. They're so good.
Though they're actually, like we said, it were supposed to be like a stylized motion graphics. The team that did this, I think I had it there. They are Axis. They're not who you think. Like, they're not Blur.
It's not Blur.
Yeah. No.
They're almost on the same field as Blur, though. They're so good.
Yeah, I have to say.
The loadouts, I think, are cool, because if you want to, like, customize how you drop into the missions, the fact that you can do that is good. We talked about the armor. Do want to follow all the lore threads, I mean, this is just talking about positives. Like, they tell a whole bunch of stuff. They talk about a whole bunch of different fire teams. There's lots of names dropped in here. If you want to pay attention into all those nitty-gritty details, you can, and it's all in there. But it's also easily missed, I guess.
Oh, it's great. It's a great, like, operation. It's a huge... They make it feel like a big grand military operation.
Yeah.
They do a good job of that, of selling the story, and the world is very quickly built in the first episode. So I thought that they did a great job of kind of leading up to Halo 4, the 6 month gap, and then now we're going back to Requiem,
right?
Because that makes sense, because you have to think of, after all these Halo games take place, what happens after? Like, well, immediately you go back to the place and ransack it. Like, you know, you'd imagine humanity's been doing this the whole time, going back to these sites. So it's kind of cool to then play that and it not be like the next game, you know.
And it makes sense, because there's a 6 month gap. Like, the Covenant have been there for 6 months, hanging out, digging in, you know, growing their contingency, learning a lot about the planet.
Humanity's kind of dealing with the new Phoenix incident too, so it makes sense they're not there.
Yeah, it makes sense that we're not there, and it makes sense that, like, we kind of ramp up to in the level of importance. Like, the first mission is just kind of getting our feet wet, figuring things out, clearing out, you know, enemies and things like that, disrupting power, all that sort of stuff, and then we kind of get into more important things as the episodes go on.
Yeah.
So from that aspect, it makes sense.
The CGI cinematics are done by a Scottish company. Called, God, I just had it and then I lost it straight away. Fool. They're called Axis Animation. So
nice.
There you go.
Very cool. Pretty cool. Giving them some props. All right. Any other positives before we kind of dive into the story now?
No, I think. Well, I mean, there are some missions that are a lot of fun. Like the missions where they drop like 50 tanks and you can just pick up a tank and play it until it gets destroyed and keep doing that over and over again. I really enjoy those ones. Like, those ones are a lot
of
vehicles.
Fun. Yeah. Vehicles are good.
Vehicle-based ones are a lot of fun, just because the amount of enemies, and then you get to, like, just run around and do stuff. Like, one of them, you're on Valhalla, and you're just in a Mantis the entire time, and a bunch of Banshees and Phantoms are coming at you. I really enjoyed that one a lot. That one was really, really cool. I mean, the day-to-day, like, the quality of life day-to-day isn't very good with Spartan Ops, but there are, you know, a couple missions here and there that I'm like, you know what, I am enjoying myself right now.
Yeah.
It usually involves vehicles.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And that, because that makes all the crowd, the hordes, more manageable and more fun to take on.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, let's get into the story. I'm going to give an overview of the key characters, and there's kind of two groups of the characters. There's the characters that are in the cutscenes, and then there are the characters that are in the missions. So I'll just give a brief overview of those, and then we're just going to go through back and forth. So we're going to talk about, so they're all episodes, and then they're chapters within episodes. So David's going to give you an overview of kind of the cutscene from the beginning of the episode, and then Chris is going to just say, okay, in the first mission you do this, and then, you know, here's the five chapters within, or excuse me, is that right? Chapter. I keep getting episodes and chapters. Yeah, so
yeah,
five,
it's very chapters. Confused. I still and don't then, understand that. Yeah. I'm looking at it right now.
Just want to make sure I'm using the right vernacular. Anyway, and then we'll just kind of go back and forth and go all through the story here in one chunk. We're not going to walk through each one, but then we'll go back and talk about our highlights and favorites and maybe some lowlights along the way. So in the cutscenes, Sarah Palmer is very featured in here, and that's what we've talked about. This is kind of her redemption to, if you didn't like her in Halo 4, she's portrayed very strongly in Spartan Ops. Probably one of the reasons I like her is Halo 4 was one of my entry points into the Halo universe, and playing through Spartan Ops and then reading Escalations, you know, that she's a big portion of that. I want to talk quickly about the Spartan 4. So she is one of the first Spartan 4s in general. We've talked about it a little bit in Halo 4. But Spartan 4s is like the natural progression from Spartan 2s to Spartan 3s to then Spartan 4s. She was, so they did an original test of, I think they experimented on 10 people. As they're like, okay, we think we figured out how to augment people so that they don't have any problems with them. And so here's like the first batch of people. And that story is a little bit told in Initiation. And there's one individual in particular that actually survives that initial test. So they kind of use her as a test case and they say, okay, it works. And now let's bring in a bunch of other people that can be our first batch of Spartan, of true Spartan 4s. And then, so I think there's like 145 or something like that, first initial class of Spartan 4s, and then they added more from there. So Sarah Palmer was part of that first class based off of her prowess being, you know, in the military, and she was identified as one of the stronger candidates, and then she had since then, you know, risen up to the rank of Spartan commander. The program started right around 2550, I think, is when they started trying to figure out how to, you know, that the initial 10 that I talked about. So the program itself is pretty young, but it's also a continuation from, you know, the whole Spartan program, which started way back in, what was that, 2517 or something like that, right?
Oh, the original yeah. Spartan program?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Spartan, the first Spartan program is in the not Orion Spartan project.
Well, Orion is what, is that 24 or something?
That's very late 24, because one is, I'll triple check it real quick, but go.
Sure. Sarah Palmer was part of that initial class, and she's been lifted up to commander. They introduced Fire Team Majestic, and I'll just run through these, and we'll kind of talk about it a little bit here and there, but Paul DeMarco is the leader. Gabriel Thorne, he's kind of the main character, I would say, like the most relatable guy.
He's supposed to be like the rookie, the new guy.
The most compassionate guy.
He's not new.
No, he's not.
Like, the whole team are kind of new to Spartan 4. Mm-hmm. I got the impression they're all kind of new Spartans. I mean, what the Spartan 4 branch is very, very different in that the Spartans are now their own branch of the military, as opposed to being like small units subsided by Oni. So like mm-hmm. they're very, very different, very differently organized. Like I said, they came from military veterans, like proper volunteers who knew what they were doing. So like their whole getup is very different, and you can see and tell the difference straight away. Because when we talk about the intro, I'll go into
those details. Literally the first thing that's pretty much said.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, these are not actual Spartans.
There's Anthony Madsen, who's kind of just a guy.
Yeah.
That's really 20, what I wrote in my notes.
The very, very first Orion was 2321.
23?
Yeah, that was the original. It was relaunched in 2491. That's the one that we know of.
Okay. So they started working on the technology way back in the 20s.
Yeah, it was like the aim of Orion was to build on bioengineering protocols established in 2164 and create stronger, better soldiers than any before them. Beginnings are merely a test to see what could be accomplished at the time. Candidates were volunteers from armed forces, blah, blah, numerous testing augmentations, where results were far less than expected. Eventually, candidates were seen in the regular chain of command, it was forgotten about. So it took another considerable period of time before we tried again.
So it's like the idea was there, but the technology wasn't there quite
was
yet.
Not. So then we tried again, which is to say the Spartan quote-unquote ones were, were Project Orion.
That's, so anyway. That's Sergeant Johnson, Spartan 1.
Yeah.
Yeah, boy. All right, so then after Madsen is Tedra Grant. She's the girl. And then there's Carlo Hoyo, who's kind of like the brute guy, I guess. There's a part in the cutscene where you kind of see... It might be even the first one.
Dude with the shotgun? It's the second
one. Dude with the shotgun. Oh, second.
Second cutscene, yeah.
So they're featured throughout, and we'll kind of cover off on them throughout. Then you get Tom Lasky, who's now the captain of the Infinity. You got Halsey, who shows up, which is awesome. Henry Glassman, who's kind of a dud. Julian Dama, who's the leader of the New Covenant here, at least the Covenant that's occupying Requiem. And then you have Geklar. And Geklar actually has some additional lore about him in books and stuff like that, which is cool. So yeah, that's kind of the main people in the cutscenes, and then in our missions, you have that little screen up in the top left that people, you know, the faces will pop up and they're talking to you throughout. So Palmer is talking to you. She's kind of the commander, right? She's telling you, kind of giving you the overall strategy of what to do. And then you have Jared Miller, who's never really introduced, but he's your mission handler, and you're kind of talking to him on an ongoing basis throughout. You have Spartan Robert Dalton. He gives you ordnance and then military support. So whenever you need some weapons or some like flyovers, you talk to that guy. Majestic will pop in here and there. So you kind of see their faces and then you'll hear their voices, which is kind of cool when you're playing through the missions or the chapters. And then Roland shows up a couple times, who's the AI of the Infinity, and he's super snarky. It's weird.
I love like, Roland.
His personality gets like really sarcastic.
It's pretty great. I like him.
It's over the top for me. I usually like that because I like 343, but it's over the top for me on Roland. But and then you have various scientists and fire teams and all that sort of stuff.
Glassman.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so why don't we start going through it? So the opening cutscene, David, what's kind of a brief overview of what happens there?
So sexy.
The opening cutscene's a pretty great set piece for what becomes a disappointing series.
Well, the cutscenes aren't disappointing.
The first chapter.
Yeah, yeah. But, like, the intro is... It starts you off with a pelican kind of coming into New Phoenix. Or is it the pelican in New Phoenix?
No, you're going into the
New Phoenix is under quarantine.
Yes, so it just comes up New Phoenix incident plus 6 months. So it pretty much tells you that this is the lead off from Halo 4.
Mm-hmm.
So you got a bunch of people standing around in a pelican pretty much talking. And you have what's introduced, Thorne is looking at a kind of a report of obviously the New Phoenix incident where it was like all the people. So you learn that Thorne was from New Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
So that's obviously his main motivation. It becomes very interesting. You can kind of introduce the different kind of characters and you can kind of sense the dynamics. There's a total military bro guys here. So I immediately dislike almost all of them based on the exchange here. So you got the two white guys. I can't really remember their names.
The DeMarco and Madsen.
DeMarco and Madsen. You dislike them instantly. You have the Darkman, Black Guy.
Hoya.
He's like the super aggressive dude, and then you get the female,
Grant.
Tedra Grant.
Grant.
I like Grant. Blanking
on this. Grant's okay. Grant and Thorne have interesting dynamics.
But
yeah.
She's good.
Then you get the beauty shot of all these pelicans loading up and flying up towards Infinity.
And it's so great
panning shot of Infinity over Earth. And now, interestingly, this title comes up called Halo Infinity. And
it comes up at the start of every episode. And I'm like, what is going on? Is this Halo Infinite?
It kind of makes me think that these were a total separate thing that got incorporated into Spartan Ops. Like, that they were creating
You'd think they'd take off Halo the Infinity. Halo Infinity title, though.
Like, I know. You think it would be Halo Spartan Ops or Halo Force. Or, you know what I mean? That's the title of the mode you're playing, and it isn't. It makes it feel like these cutscenes are a totally separate thing, just with this title popping up.
They just got rebranded into Spartan Ops somehow, but these were supposed to be something else.
That's kind of the flavor I'm getting, just with how they dealt with it. Anyway, it's beautiful. Obviously, it looks amazing. You would know that it's not blur. It fits perfectly well into the game. Then got some pelicans. Like obviously, they land in. You have one of the funniest scenes, and obviously the Palmer Redemption.
So
you have all these...
Good.
Roland pops up and kind of tells the team, okay, assemble, their commander's coming on deck. So the kind of guys are just chit-chatting and crapping and talking crap. And Palmer, we know who Palmer is. She comes in and approaches the fire team. The lead DeMarco steps up and immediately starts flirting. And you're just like, this is delicious, because we all know Palmer's attitude.
It's so
she takes it real well. So she pretty much cuts him down to size real fast, which is pretty awesome.
Wow,
so,
a whole fire team, huh?
Yeah, that line is delivered so well.
Oh my god!
So of course she's commander, so she's the lead of all Spartan force on Infinity. Which
she introduces
ridiculous.
Herself like that, and like
yeah,
it's just amazing. The look on his face is just like, ah shit.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
It's pretty damn good.
It's so funny.
She gives her a little spiel, and they kind of head away to get kind of suited up against. And Infinity, you kind of get told what the mission is. Essentially, we're going back to Requiem. Mm-hmm. And then you see the slipspace. Infinity going to slipspace. And the scene kind of cuts them back to the bridge. You got Lasky again and Roland kind of discussing their ops, what we're doing, where we're going. Palmer's introduced here as well. You get... I've always liked the dynamic between Palmer and Lasky. I think they're great characters together.
Mm-hmm.
Again, she... I think it was an off-air. She is a better character, Palmer, I will say, when she's not being overshadowed by other characters. So
yeah.
When there's more important people on screen than her, she totally fades into the background and has a kind of little bit of a shitty attitude. I always feel it. Anyway, I know there's lots of people out there love Palmer. She's redeemed somewhat here. I like her interactions with the different characters. And Lasky's really good. So you get the nice kind of dynamic there of building these two guys up. And that kind of develops over time and even becomes under strain. I kind of like that in the cutscenes. You can kind of see it. So then you get the awesome scene of a kind of cutting back to the Palmer giving a speech out to like all the Spartans in that great big hall where all the Spartans are kind of lined up in armors. We talked about this at the end of the last mission, where the kind of epilogue ended up with Chief.
But now they're putting on the armor.
It's
so cool to see the process too. It's great.
It's so awesome. So Palmer's giving her speech of what we're doing, where we're going. It's kind of what you expect. You get to see Crimson kind of load up. And you get to see Majestic kind of attached in their crazy, what I'm going to say is Westworld style things now, even though obviously this was first. So it's cool, they're all loaded up with their armors, and they each have a different armor, completely different kind of Spartan IV armor, obviously, or the other armor. So that's nice to see all the different flavors kind of come out in the one team and fire team, and it seems heavily customizable to the individual, which is kind of... makes sense because it incorporates that into what Halo 4 multiplayer is. You then cut to a bunch of Covenant ships, Covenant cruisers, and one of the best in all Halo. Infinity comes out of slipspace and just smashes right through the largest ship, the Capital Cruiser.
Doesn't even give a shit.
Like, it's nothing.
Amazing.
Its shields flare and it's just boom, fucked.
What Palmer's saying, like, if these freaks want to meet God, it's our duty to help them along, and then boom, it's so good.
Yeah, it's good.
I love Roland's just like, not normal transition back to real space, like, no acknowledgement that we just fucked this dude up. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
we don't even see him. This ship's so goddamn big, we're just like, what was that? Yeah. Did we step on a bug?
Then you get the second amazing part of this, which is the ships go straight into combat mode.
Oh.
And you see a fleet erupt out of... You may forget to see this before. You knew Infinity could do this, but to see it, it's amazing.
This cutscene is the best example of Infinity's scale that I think we've ever seen.
Yep.
It's so good, where it drops like all the different classes of cruisers out of its belly.
And then pelicans come out of that.
Those are forward under Dawns dropping out of its belly.
Yeah, and then you have like all the missiles flying off. You have Seraphs coming in. You've got Phantoms coming in. You've got like the broadswords are also coming out with pelicans. And I watched this several times to make sure no pelican crashes or blows up the sequence.
What?
Which is ridiculous. Yeah, how? Because you see all the pelicans flying down, and they have obviously the objective. They're going into Requiem. Well, Infinity's holding up the fleet outside, and there are Phantoms and Seraphs chasing, but like there's also broadswords providing cover, and they blow up all of them. That like I'm watching it right now just to make sure I'm not crazy. All the pelicans I see get through, And it's got some kind of, they fly through debris and stuff like that, which is kind of cool. Probably some of it's left behind from Forward Under Dawn and various Covenant ships. And that's pretty much it. We have now arrived. It's amazing. It's called Departure. It's the first one. If you've never seen it, go watch it right now.
Yeah, it's so that's good. And it's, and then it's, you know, we're going to try to be brief with the rest of them, but that one deserves a long overview because it's so good. Very good. And lots is crammed into that. It's a, you know, 5 minutes maybe long, but there's a lot crammed in there.
For setting, like we said, for setting up Infinity, for setting up where you are, what you're doing, why you're doing it, who these characters are, very good. Obviously, we don't like Majestic, and there is obviously Thorn is being heavily developed through these cutscenes, and it's interesting. We've talked about it before, so I might as well mention it now. But he was going to be in Fireteam Osiris. He was originally going to, like, Buck replaced him, which was a good replacement. But like Thorn was definitely being set up here to be a major player, and it never happened.
Yeah. All right, Chris, so what do we do? Boots on the ground.
Pretty much nothing. We do Spartan chores. Like, you're just kind of hanging out, shooting things, marking things, grabbing things. The only thing that really happens is at the very last one where you locate this weird Forerunner box. Looks like a trunk.
It does.
So you have to find the artifact and then defend it until the Pelican arrives. But other than that, there's not much in this one.
Yeah, it's true. It's introducing you to some of the maps.
Yeah.
And that's like part of the frustration we talk about. Stuff. It's like you kind of come back to some of these. And the maps are all right. I mean, they're all right. But from a mission standpoint, that's where they just get a little repetitive. But you're like, what? In the first one, you're just killing a bunch of Covenant. Just clearing them out.
Yeah, and there's
the
like
area.
Some wraiths and stuff that you can get on. Yep. So that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
The other one,
the second one's like just power generators you're taking out.
Yeah.
So just more chores.
More chores. Just a lot of chores. Like then, and the fourth one, you just literally clear a structure for the science team to investigate later.
Yeah, but the science team was investigating. There's like a signal that they found, and then you download some data, and then that data gets disseminated to then point you to where this artifact is in the last one.
Yes. Yes.
So that's usually how it works, is like in the earlier missions, you kind of find something that, you know, at the end of that, maybe like at 1-3, I think in this case it's 1-4, the fourth chapter, you actually say, okay, here's some data, let's see what
let's
this
go
data
find
actually
that thing.
Is. Yeah, exactly. So that's usually how it plays out from all of these. But so you find that cool floaty trunk briefcase thing.
Yep.
But then it ends, and then you have to wait a week, and then you have to wait for the cutscene. So like, let's find out what this actually is. And David, what is this a thing? Now, how do they explain this in the next cutscene?
They don't explain it.
Well, they don't. It's super mysterious.
Yeah, it's mysterious for a while. It's a Forerunner thing. So the cutscene kind of starts with Majestic in a firefight, fighting off some space dogs. He kind of sets a character piece of what's the guy's name? He's super aggressive. I've totally blanked on him again. Hoya. So he kind of goes out of formation with his shotgun and pretty much gets
click clacked.
He gets click clacked real good. There's some good scenes here of Prometheans fighting and stuff like that. And then immediately you see the Pelican. It fades to black when he kind of gets hit, but then they see the Pelican arrive. I will say these Pelicans move beautifully, the way Pelicans are supposed to. And it lands and has like Palmer being pretty harsh on DeMarco. And you see your man being kind of wheeled in on a stretcher, and you kind of what happens to God, what's his name again? Hoya happened to Hoya. She kind of hints that he's not good at like controlling his fire team. Like it's his responsibility. So he kind of, and I think he understands that. So you can kind of see some of it. It's kind of a sobering moment. But I like it. It's a good exchange. You have Thorn, the inquisitive one, watching. And it pretty much Palmer says, oh, Crimson recovered this while you were pissing around down below. So obviously the team that gets the spotlight and the cutscene is not Crimson, which is the player's team, which doesn't really make sense.
Nope.
Yeah. So it shows a hovering thing being brought in by some scientists off of Pelican. It activates and drops. And it has that beautiful orange glow, and it kind of it shoots out the pulse, kind of like a scan, which is exactly what it's doing. So it's scanning and the Infinity and knocked off a bunch of systems. So you see kind of like grav goes and like the engines shut off and it goes all kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. You see Infinity like from the outside, its engines shutting down and it's slowly getting pulled into Requiem's kind of field. You have a character, Glassman. Is he just introduced in this one? Yeah. Glassman gets introduced. So he's like the lead scientist on Infinity. He's in the engine room trying to kind of get everything back online. He's just a generic scientist dude. He's kind of met, like Colin says. He manages to get the engines booted back up. My apologies. Palmer is standing there.
This is the best shit ever. I love it.
She has her grav boots on, which is pretty cool. She kind of runs up to it and kicks it.
She sprints up to it and just gives it a kick.
And that, like, whatever, disconnects the connection. And the trunk kind of crashes and turns off. Infinity powers back up again. Infinity's kind of stuck with this thing. There's a bit of dialogue. Glassman kind of walks up. And as you expect the scientist guy to do, he touches it. And turning it on essentially activates what it is. Some of what it is. And it looks like it digitized him, but mm-hmm. it essentially teleports him.
It's a slip space portal pretty much.
Yeah, we don't know that yet. Right.
So he kind of gets sucked into the machine. Lasky's trying to help him and doesn't.
Palmer keeps him from going in there too.
And he pretty much gets sucked in like what you would think. Actually, we've already seen it. The composer does. Yeah, so mm-hmm. you think Glassman's been composed is kind of where it leads you to go.
Yeah. Now, boots on the ground. What do we do in these missions?
Boots on the ground. So
Crimson.
2-1 is just kind of... There's a distress signal from some scientists because scientists can't do shit. They just need to be rescued.
Well, that's the thing is like they show all the fire teams going down, but meanwhile there's a bunch of scientists around at different locations, and so I guess you kind of sort that out as you go. But a lot of these missions include like, oh, the scientists are getting attacked again.
It's like all of them. Like the second one is the same thing. It's just tracking them down mm-hmm. and finding them behind some kind of shield. Mm-hmm. The third one is actually like there's some Marines pinned down, and you have to save them, and then they help you fight throughout the whole mission, or you just let them die.
The dialogue changes, though.
Did you notice that? Like, mm-hmm. Palmer's like, you realize this was supposed to be a search and rescue mission, right?
Yeah.
You're like, I'm sorry, that's just me. Why is it just me?
The name of that Marine group, the squad, is Hacksaw, which I like.
Yeah.
And then they're never to be heard of again.
Nope, because you killed them. They all died.
Well, that's a good point. Yeah, because they could have died there.
2-4 is literally you heading out to a mission and then you get shot down. That's it.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's kind of cool, but it's also kind of annoying at the same time. Like, yeah, it's really cool that you've crashed and then you have to fight your way and then you have to pretty much wait for someone to come get you. And then 2-5 is you actually going to do the thing that you were going to do before you got shot down, which is locating a science team Gregarian that's been gone, that went missing in a Forerunner structure, which is, I think, the same Forerunner structure you cleared out earlier.
That's a reused map from
you,
1-4,
you come here a lot, honestly, the mm-hmm. Refuge.
The Refuge.
So mm-hmm. you just literally help them out, and you turn on some computers. And stuff, yep. mm-hmm. and then a bunch of space dogs come out and try to murder you. So, that's it.
Yep. Yeah, and I don't know, it's hard, because all these maps have different names, and you know, as we go through it, we'll probably name the highlights. We haven't gotten to my favorite yet, so we'll cover that one a little bit. But, so we end there. Now, what's episode 3 start off with?
So good.
That's actually where it ends, because, okay... This is the first real disconnect because nothing you did, player games, makes any difference between these two cutscenes. So mm-hmm. all that saving scientists, all that kind of stuff never gets mentioned or kind of comes up again. Well, I guess the place, the base does, doesn't it? Is it the base that gets... Okay, we'll talk when we get there. So none of that kind of matters, which is disappointing.
But this is a great
but
scene.
What isn't disappointing is an amazing cutscene. So this one's called Catherine. And in the world of Halo, there is only one.
So when there can when be that only happens, one.
I think this is the major moment that gives such a weight to this campaign that you bring in such a big heavy hitter. Which is crazy, especially because she hasn't been in the games other than Reach. And that was only
briefly. In the very beginning of Halo 4.
Sorry, in the cutscene of Halo 4, yes. Which is important, actually, because obviously she's in prison, captured, and she is working under duress for Oni, especially to build the Infinity, which is kind of told in other books under the lore and stuff like that. So she's being interviewed and questioned on Spartans, obviously. So her attitude then is kind of... That's interesting that you remember that, because I totally forgot. So her attitude towards Spartans, and very much towards Spartan 4s, is highly negative, and you get that straight away. But anyway, let's go back to the cutscene. So... you have this sick ass prowler.
So
that kind of decloaks as it kind of is coming into dock inside of Infinity. You have Palmer and Lasky and Majestic kind of standing beside him. You have DeMarco and the other guy who's not important. Palmer is like, "Are you sure about this? You don't have to go through with it." And he says, "We need her. She's important." So she pretty much built this ship. So the reason why she's here is obviously because of the damage being done from the previous thing. So the ship opens up and out walks some military police with Halsey. Beautiful,
so gorgeous, amazing.
Old Halsey. Old, wrinkly Halsey.
She's very wrinkly.
Very wrinkly. So,
but they're nice. They look nice.
She's excellent. Straight away.
They're very soft wrinkles.
Yeah. Straight away, she is all business. She wants to be unhandcuffed on the ship that I built, and then she's like, "Show me the device." So she knows kind of what she's here to do. Then we get our Halo Infinity cutscene again. Premise: so they bring her straight into the deck, which is obviously being cleared of everything except for this device that is still on and kind of pulsing. He kind of like lets her know what the kind of terms are, like what's kind of going on. She's obviously intrigued. She doesn't know what she's looking at yet. The dynamics and the conversations here are fascinating, between how Lasky treats Halsey, how Halsey treats Lasky, and how the Spartan 4s are treating her and how she thinks of them. So the dynamics here are flying around, and it's
like,
great.
Yeah. And Halsey is like one of the most pompous people in the universe, because she always walks around with this self-importance, which is always amazing. I love to see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I especially love it from... and it's such a heavily militarized world, which is the Halo universe. The civilian contractor scientist being like, "I'm above all your shit," is amazing. So we need characters like that, and she's great,
not afraid of anybody, even though there's totally super soldiers all over the place.
Yeah,
she even comments that she's like, "I see, I warrant 3 of the new models," talking about her Spartan entourage. Oh,
it's delicious.
Nails the Spartans in this episode. She's like doing a slam dunk on the Spartan force. Yeah. She's like, she's F not even, you guys.
Not even directly looking at them, and she's kind of really shitty towards them, and it's just so good.
It's
and
so beautiful.
DeMarco's like, Lasky asked for the best, and she's like, And yet.
It's so great.
It's like, oh, that's such a nice remark.
She's so great. Oh my god, I love Halsey so much, just because of how much of a biatch she is. It's like, it's so juicy.
Totes. So she touches the machine and kind of figures out straight away that it's talking to the engines, or she wants to go straight to the engines.
She doesn't even say anything. She's just like, engine room.
Well, she rips Glassman right there too.
I'm not Henry Glassman.
Yeah. You have like, okay, they're traveling to like the they're on a little internal elevator, because obviously it takes time to get around the Infinity. So this is just the backstory of obviously the characters Majestic, who know nothing and don't know anything about Halsey, are kind of like talking to themselves of like, who is she, why is she here, why are we guarding this old woman, what's the fucking story here? And they kind of just, this is just obviously FIFA 3 telling the player, if you don't know who Halsey is, this is who Halsey is. So be impressed.
Master Chief.
She can get a Master Chief and the original Spartans. He's like, oh man, wow. It's like, yeah, she stole a bunch of kids and turned them in, like, that's still a rumor, obviously. And he's like, wow, what's she gonna do with a bunch of kids? And like, he turns around and looks at her, and she's staring right at him.
Oh, it's so good.
First we taught them to be silent. then we taught them to be Spartans.
I love that. That's another big slam dunk. Yeah. Oh, keep your mouth totally. Shut, you bitches. I hate you, man.
She's staring straight at Palmer, and you can see it hits. Oh, it's so good.
And Palmer shifts. She, like, shifts slightly. Yeah, yeah. She's, like, super like uncomfortable.
Yeah, oh, it's great.
It's so it's amazing that Halsey's just literally making everyone super uncomfortable.
She's so, like, for, like, the prisoner, she's totally in charge, and I love that. That's so good.
Well, she's commanding the respect of everybody. Totally. They don't know who she is, but she knows who she is.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't matter. Like, she's just totally above them. So she's in the engine room. She's touching panels and buttons and stuff, and then Palmer's not happy about that and kind of says, like, we're letting her touch stuff. So Lasky's like, she built this thing. We need her. Again, and then he's like, I could type for her, and if that makes you feel better. And
she's like, it would help, like, but it's like, no, that's ridiculous.
Yeah. So the instrument pulses, and then she kind of spells it out that the instrument is Forerunner and it's talking to the engines, which are Forerunner, but it's also talking to all these other ship subsystems, which is kind of worrying because it shouldn't be. Why is it doing that? We don't know what it's doing. So essentially, she says, you came here to
study
Requiem. But Requiem is actually studying you, or someone at Requiem is. Mm-hmm. So she realizes that all that data is being beamed back down to the surface of Requiem somewhere. So, like, that's kind of the setup, really, of, like, what is happening. So that's kind of good. Like, Halsey kind of figures this shit out. And then we cut to some elites kind of walking around, doing some stuff.
Doing elite stuff.
Setting up being elite stuff. And they all look great, and they're awesome. We get kind of introduced to the character Gek really quickly here, and then the head honcho, Jewel M'Dama, shows up. He was an interesting character, but, like we always said before, he's not predominant in Halo 4, which is weird, but he's like the
Dyadic. He's not even in Halo 4.
He's not even really in Halo 4, but, like, he's the leader of all the forces here, of the Covenant forces, so he's still using the Dyadic name to command respect and to kind of build his kind of sect. So essentially he's after this shrine that they're all kind of staring at. They're trying to get access to it. They call it the Artifact's Gift. So that is Glassman. So we see Glassman brought in. He's kind of beat up. He's in kind of change. And he said he's offered his information for his life. So to not be killed, he's going to work for them. So then it kind of screen cuts to black, and then we're done.
Hooray! Yep. My turn. All right.
Back to Crimson. What are we doing?
All right. The first one, you are sent to assassinate Park Vol, which is like a shipmaster commander for Jewel M'Dama.
Like a lieutenant, something like that. Yeah.
Except, like, he's the most slithery elite in the entire world and runs away from you. Like, this entire all of these chapters, he just runs away from you. So he escapes, and then you get tank time.
Yep.
So,
tank time.
So, and then you go to Galileo Base and repel some enemies. Fun stuff.
I like Galileo Base. That's my favorite map.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I really liked it, too. I liked it on multiplayer as well. It was a fun map.
Mm-hmm.
These next two are actually in Valhalla. Spartan Mountain, so save Mountain Squad. And then Halsey gets to talk to you, which is nice. Right. She just says, like, a couple things. It's not that much. Yay, but it's still like, Halsey. Oh my god, it's Halsey!
Because they're trying to figure out what some signals are, right?
Basically, it's just explaining the, like, beams that come out of the structures in Valhalla.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right.
Which is cool.
Yeah,
I like that.
Super cool. Then
this map is called Two Giants, by the way, in Halo 4.
Whatever. It's still Valhalla.
You can call it Valhalla, though.
I'm going to call it Valhalla, because that's what it is. It's goddamn Valhalla. Because the next mission is actually even called Shootout in Valhalla, so...
That's good.
Yeah.
And that one... So the fourth one is literally just Mantis time.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's just Mantis time. You get to blow up a cruiser at the end, too. It's pretty cool.
That is fun. I like that.
It's hanging above you. Yeah. It's way up in the clouds.
This one's actually the coolest one because all these forces you see, like, coming from the cruiser and stuff. It's pretty cool. I didn't mind this one. I had a lot of fun with this one. And then the final one is called Hunting Trip, and then you just kill Park Vol. And he's lame. He just dies like a dummy elite, like all the other
super
ones.
Super lame. He's like goldish or something. He's a little
in the gold armor.
Mm-hmm.
But still lame.
Yep. And then there's some phantoms that come, and I think you get some, like, rocket launchers and Spartan lasers and stuff.
Yeah, the moment you kill Park Vol, a bunch of other people come, and it's like, we already killed the guy. There's no reason for you to even be here at this point, dudes.
I know.
My dudes, he's dead. You failed. Go home.
The one thing we didn't mention, and I don't know why I remember right now, is there's the Red first blue Easter
eggs. Oh my god. Actually,
oh, I'm just going to mention it at the end. Yeah, there's a lot of
red. There's a lot of them. Cool. So at the shootout in Valhalla, it's just these like crates and boxes that are in weird spots. So the crate's like on top of a tree. Like the moment you spawn, if you look up, you'll see it. And if you shoot it, it plays the red versus blue, like da 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 da. But in this one, like when the mantises are coming, because they come like halfway through the mission, and it's like, we have a surprise for you. And then Griff's like, it's giant robots. And Simmons is like, you ruined the surprise. He's like, they're in battle. They probably don't want a surprise. It's pretty great.
Yeah.
They're all really, really
funny.
I don't
think I ever did them or found them at all.
Oh, they're great.
It's cool.
They're so much fun.
And most of them. Mm-hmm. All right. Now, sort of chapter four.
Chapter four. She gets real. So, we have Thorne and his lady friend Grant kind of walking down a True Infinity, and he's going to pick up Haldi. And he is kind of super polite. He's real nice. He knocks on the door. She really kind of appreciates that. So they kind of instantly build a kind of... There's a little rapport here between Thorne and Haldi.
He's just so curious.
He shows her some respect to a degree,
yeah.
I think.
And he's a good boy.
She responds to that.
He pretty much just takes her to work. You get the impression that this has kind of been ongoing. It's maybe some days have passed that this is a regular occurrence. So she's set up in and around the artifact. She's got kind of a bunch of different things. So Thorne is using this time to kind of quiz her and find out a lot more about what kind of who she is, what she's done. So he's asking about the Spartan 2 program, the originals, did you take kids, why? And she kind of engages him. She's first off quite standoffish, like, oh, that's still very heavily classified, kind of lording that information. But I'm also assuming that people don't talk to her or are very nice to her very often, so she very easily opens up.
She doesn't even open up that much. She kind of lets him come to his own assumptions, but also kind of guides him to the right ones.
Yeah, I mean, like, she pretty much
never says anything.
Yeah, the advantages of using children were psychological and physiological, and he takes it up with like psychological. So you think that we're not, you know what I mean? We're not cut out.
Some are closer than others.
Some are closer than others, which is her being nice and shitty at the same time, which I enjoyed. So obviously she's still heavily defensive about the Spartan 2s, and we know from her journal and stuff that, you know, there are regrets in there. She's not a perfect human, but she has this mask that she puts forward, and it's awesome. She's an awesome character. So there's a bit of dialogue essentially here between Thorne and Halsey, but what Halsey is also doing, you don't realize, is that something through her pad is communicating to her and kind of asking her questions, and she's engaging, trying to figure out who's talking to her and what is it. It's no good. You can always imagine it's no good, but she's keeping it to herself because obviously she doesn't trust anybody. So she's kind of having two conversations, and eventually she kind of cuts off Thorne, saying she's busy and working, go away.
Well, even before that, like, there's crazy manipulation. I'm not sure if you guys caught it, but they ask what the Prometheans are. She has no idea what the Prometheans are, and she kind of, like,
That's very interesting. Yeah,
she gets Thorne to tell her exactly what the Prometheans are. It's amazing. Mm. It's so good. Mm. She's just collecting the information. All. Yeah, she has no idea what they are, and she, like... She says New Phoenix, and then says, well, why are you here fighting these, what are they called, Prometheans? And then, like, she's like, Prometheans gave humans fire. What do you think the Prometheans can give us? And then he goes on to this rant about, you know, they're just machines. They're forerunner machines. And then she's like, interesting. And that's when she doesn't want to talk to him anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. That's pretty cool. I didn't even cop that. I love that. She's so good.
Oh, so she's real slick. Like, oh my goodness.
Then we cut to the bridge, and you have Roland, Lasky, and Palmer kind of looking over like a simulation, like the 3D map. It shows a Pelican being shot down. They explain, like, okay, we're at this base. I think it's Copernicus or something like that.
Copernicus.
Yep. And
that's Fireteam Castle was in that.
Fireteam Castle, yeah. They were doing like a routine like drop of supplies, I think, to a base, and they got shot down. But on their way down, they managed to identify that Junon Dama is there, and so obviously that's a big lure because they want to kill Junon Dama. So There's kind of some conversations. It cuts back to Halsey again being talking on her datapad. Who is this? What's Promethean? So this cuts back to what Krista said. So it kind of cuts back and forth here. A bit more talking. We already kind of covered that. She unveils, gets all the information out of Thorn because he's a simple little boy. And then it cuts back to Glassman, who is all strapped up with a nice looking device. We find out later what it is. And the Jundama is questioning him, what the hell is happening. He doesn't speak Sangheili, so there's kind of broken English kind of fire back and forward. So essentially what Didact's Hand is trying to do is activate this shrine because he believes in it is the librarian. And the librarian will tell him everything and big and powerful. So Glassman is trying his best to kind of hack his way in to get this thing on. So there's not really a whole lot of dialogue here. They kind of explain what it is I'm looking at, what you think it is. They spell it out for you nicely, which is fine. And what essentially Jewel says is that he wants the Forerunner's miracles for himself to make it them our miracles. So essentially he wants the technology and artifacts. He's smarter than he thinks, but obviously he's playing it up for the crowd. In terms of, like, obviously these are believers, so in using the religious sect of the, or the religious impact that the Didact has, he's building his kind of force. You can see it, like,
yeah, and cool. We already know that from the books that Jewel Mandama isn't religious at all.
Yeah. Overall, he's an interesting character, but you need all the media to kind of piece it
you
together and remember.
You need to read the entire Kilo 5 trilogy to even understand who this guy is.
Yeah, which is kind of interesting because he's a way more interesting character in Kilo 5 than he comes across here. But anyway, just obviously a disconnect there a bit. But then that pretty much ends with the Sangheili kind of cheering and... yeah, it kind of cuts, and that's it. We're done.
Them, you know, it's the same old story with the Covenant, right? It's a different leader, but they're still trying to use Forerunner technology to gain power and, you know, a foothold in the universe.
Well,
that sort of stuff.
The dynamic's kind of different in terms of, especially because it's from the Sangheili perspective, who were like heavily religious and very anti using the Forerunner tech. So the exploitation of it is a big deal.
That's a good point.
Throughout the media. So, like, that's why I find Jules' wording and his speech very interesting and clever in terms of how he's getting around that he's like, he understands these are holy artifacts and there's miracles, but these miracles can be our miracles, and then we can, and then, you know what I mean? It's just like, yeah, give me all your cool shit and I'll do what I want with it. Do you know what I mean? So that's kind of cool. That's why I kind of liked him, and he came, yeah, that kind of spiel kind of came across. So that was kind of cool.
All right, what's Crimson up to now?
All right, I'm going to read all my notes verbatim now. All right, so this...
They start to run together, don't they?
Oh, I mean, my God, they do. This episode is called... this whole section is called Didact's Hand. So the first one is play with Forerunner stuff, gather Covenant communications. The next one is you're trying to find and kill Jewel. They kind of spotted him, but then he jumps through a portal. And then, so you jump through the portal to go after him, and then the next one is called Random Transport, and it's just a bunch more portals. Like, I don't know.
But you drop out of the portal, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, you
right?
drop out of the portal, and then... But at the same time, like, I don't know why we're playing with portals here. That's not this game. There's a game that does portals, and it's not this one. The next one is The Chase, which Jewel drops an object... And then the final one is the Didact's Gifts, where we recover something called the Promethean Soul. Ooh.
It's the Didact's Gift, is what it is.
Sounds cool.
But it's a Promethean Soul. Yeah. Yep.
Ooh, spicy. Ooh.
That last one, that last one's pretty fun. I feel like that's back to Galileo base.
Yeah.
And there's a big section, there's like a whole lineup of saws.
Oh yeah!
Oh yeah! I like this.
I just use saws all the time. Yeah.
Damn right,
it's very good. And then there's some scientists involved here and there too, but for the most part, like we're chasing down Jewel throughout the portals and whatnot. So very good. Cutscene time. What's the last one? How's the last one start? How's the last
cutscene
one end?
Time.
I guess.
So this is kind of cool. So obviously that mission now directly ties into this story, which I like. So they did a good job of leading what your mission was doing into what this cutscene now plays as. So obviously it kind of kicks off with the base, and you see Majestic, I got it right this time while I'm thinking about it, they're moving their box, their gift, and they're kind of moving in. They come under fire from Phantoms. I think it's a Phantom. Oh, sorry, Banshees. There's kind of a bit of a hoo-ha of like the team getting back together. You have the DeMarco giving a crappy order to fly out in the Pelicans, and then his team kind of like splintering off against him and kind of like, that's a stupid idea, we're not doing that. And then Thorne is like, I have an idea. So he kind of runs out and jumps and boards a Banshee, which is pretty cool.
Super cool.
And then it kind of looks like he kind of, two other team members jump on with him. Did you get that impression? That's what they were going to do.
And then they blew up the Phantom.
Yeah, it kind of cuts to them, but I kind of want to see what they did there.
Yeah, it's a really weird cut. Yeah, it's a really weird. It just cuts straight to the Phantom exploding.
Yeah, because it cuts to like Thorne is like in the Banshee, but he's not like controlling it yet. But he's like in it, hovering, and it looks like the two other team members, Grant and Dwyer, are kind of running up. I thought they were going to run up and jump on the wings, and he was going to fly them over and kind of do some cool shit.
Oh, that would have been cool.
But we don't get the scene of that. It kind of just cuts to a cliff face and Jewel and Gek looking down and the Phantom blowing up. And then Gek is like, they're getting away, and Jewel doesn't care. He's like, it's totally fine.
It's all according to plan.
We were supposed to let them have it. Now we've made it look like we cared, and now they've got it, so that's fine. Then cut to this device being examined by Halsey on Infinity. She's in a room in a lab by herself. She touches it. It kind of disintegrates and kind of opens up a little bit. She realizes that it's similar as an AI core. It kind of has similar patterns. Roland comes on. He kind of has a little bit of a chit chat. And then it kind of kicks off. It has a cool effect and it almost looks like a person, like a hologram forming. And then it dissipates. And all the screens start playing images. Halsey cops on and gets the Roland to pause the images, and the images essentially are memories, which Thorne realizes by looking at it and saying, this is New Phoenix, this human remember. Why? How is this possible? This memory is in here. So then Halsey puts together what Prometheans are, that they are humans. And this all turns because Lasky knows his information, but obviously the rest of the team doesn't. They knew that like ancient humanity were Prometheans, but not that New Phoenix humanity were turned into Prometheans. Yeah. They don't understand how the Composer works and that what had happened there. And to be honest, we didn't know either. So it kind of tells us exactly what happened, what New Phoenix did.
I think it says that some of these Prometheans that we're fighting now are New Phoenix people, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So that's the kind of big reveal. And especially Thorne, who is from New Phoenix, finds this quite disturbing. So he pretty much storms out. And does something really stupid. So he storms out. So then you get the kind of back and forward between Halsey and Lasky and
Palmer.
The team, Palmer as well, and stuff like that. Halsey gets caught out here. So she's been still communicating on her touchpad. And Palmer, who's very suspicious, cops on that something more is going on. Why don't you have all the answers? It cuts to Jewel watching Halsey through the device. And he's been the one is revealed, and he's the one communicating to her on her touchpad, kind of leading her down the kind of the avenue, kind of leading her on essentially, which is very, very interesting to see an elite soldier kind of manipulating Halsey in such a way by luring information
in front of her, which is extremely strange for an elite to do. Elites always will go for like they call this kind of stuff like human deception tactics. Like this is something Gek learned from being around humans. Not Gek, Jewel.
Yes, which is amazing. And it's really good because all that's set up in the books of how Jewel changes his mentality based on his interactions with humanity. It doesn't seem very significant in the cutscene, but when you know what happens around it, it brings more weight to it, which is Halo 4 in a nutshell, really. So, again, you kind of see that. And then Palmer cops on. She pulls her gun. She's so eager to pull her gun on
Halsey. Oh, yeah. This is the second time she's done it, too.
Lasky's having no shit. Immediately says take her into custody. He realizes now that she's been keeping things from him. And then it cuts back to Glassman, who has managed to activate something on the shrine. It looks like a big bubble shield. All of the elites are down praying, essentially, to this. Jewel kind of stands up and is all kind of impressed, but there's nothing really said here. It cuts back to Thorne, who walks up to the device, the Artifact Infinity, and touches it, because that's a clever thing to do, and then immediately gets sucked in. So because we know he's not dead, he know he's going to be somewhere else. So it immediately cuts to where he teleports to, which I think is where you got it from originally.
Yes.
So it's back in that location. So he sees Thorn kind of standing up and being surrounded by elites to pull up energy swords. Fade to black, baby.
All done, except it's not, because we got stuff to talk about.
Except Crimson's got to do
something. Crimson's got to do something. They don't do much, let me tell you. So the first one is you just learn how to use portals. It's a defense mission. Like, in this entire, like, all these episodes are, like, Palmer's gone. Like, she usually talks to you during the missions and stuff. And they're like, we can't get a hold of Palmer, we can't get a hold of Palmer, so.
Where is Palmer during this?
I don't know. You know, pointing guns at Halsey, I guess.
Yeah.
So the next one is you just defend scientists or let them die because they're dumb. Because these scientists will literally walk right up to the Prometheans and let them shoot them. And they don't run away. They run towards the Prometheans. Also, the first episode is a defense mission, and you have to defend these machines, but then the Prometheans can destroy these machines quite fast when you die.
Yes.
And if the machines die, then it just literally nothing. It just kicks you out into the main menu. Like, just boom.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. So annoying. I was like, what? Yes. But anyway.
I thought Roland was being super, super sarcastic in that first one.
It was pretty funny. The third one is defend more dumb scientists, and then you get to defend some dumb scientists while Team Shadow gets to infiltrate a cruiser and blow it up.
Yeah.
Ooh, and they're talking about it throughout the entire mission, and I'm like, why the hell am I here fighting dumb scientists when I could have been on Team Shadow infiltrating a cruiser? What's going on? I was so pissed. I'm like, why can I not do that? Why is that not the mission?
Does Halo 4 have any multiplayer maps that are like on Covenant ships?
No, I don't think
so. Like interiors? That could be why we're not doing it, Crystal.
Yeah, but I want it.
That would have been a good mission.
That would have been a great mission.
Damn right it would have been a good mission.
They also have, they mentioned the Covenant, the Silent Blade. Spec Ooh. Ops team is in that one.
Oh, yeah. They show up. They're all crazy. Also, if you let all the scientists die, the main scientist gets really pissed at you. Like, at the end of the mission, he's like, you let them die? And I'm like, man, how about you teach your people to run away from danger instead of towards it? How about we do that? The fourth mission is just defense, but this time in a mantis.
Yeah.
Yay. It's a cool mission.
It's a cool mission, but there's a lot of defense in this one.
And so they're starting to mention finding Thorn, too.
Yeah, right, so at the end here. The final one is literally called Spartan Thorn, and my notes are Thorn plays hide and seek, and then we extinct the entire hunter race, and then there's a cliffhanger. Because, like, at the end, the finale to this is, like, they drop, like, six pairs of hunters.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, why? And then, but they give you a tank, so it's fine. It's a lot of fun, but just like, oh my gosh, they're just all dead now. And then at the very end, you're like on top of this cliff about to get evac, and then your ship blows up, and then like 20 phantoms just come out and point all their guns at you, and then it fades to black.
Did you pick up how that the pelican got destroyed?
How?
It was one of the drop pods.
it just like went
came
through.
Down oh, and just really? Smashed it. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Oh,
that's
one of those cool. giant drop pods that the Covenant used.
Oh man, Pretty I didn't cool. notice that at all. It's good, though. It's real good.
No, I never caught that. That's cool.
But, yeah, that's everything. We did it, boys.
Right. And then we have a nice little break, and we left to wonder what's going to happen to Thorn.
Now we have to play through season
two. The other thing, it's kind of interesting because, you know, Thorn is dropped off in thought to, you know, essentially he's captured, right? But then also Fireteam Crimson gets the fade to black treatment too, so something happens to Fireteam Crimson, but you don't know. So in both the cinematic and the gameplay, they have these little cliffhangers for you to wonder about. And there were, like we talked about earlier in the show, there was I think a good month or so, maybe more, between chapters 5 and 6.
It was a hot minute.
Yeah. All right, so we are running long, but any highlights throughout this? I mean, we've kind of talked about this to a degree. Let's just talk about highlights. Halsey. We've already covered off enough lowlights. Let's just talk about highlights in general.
Halsey's
good. Yep. I'm a fan of Palmer's portrayal here. And what else? obviously we talked about the Infinity crashing through, like that first opening cutscene just sets up the story really well in general. Gameplay moments, some of the, like, just, you know, the vehicles are fun for the most part. You know, whenever you have a vehicle mission, it helps a lot in the
tedium.
Yeah. There are, you know, I like the Galileo base. There are a couple maps here and there that are good. The Two Giants, which is the Valhalla, that's a pretty cool map in general. And then I do like some of the story threads are lame from the chapters, but the one we just talked about where you're finding the portal system and figuring out how that works, I actually don't mind that. I think that works out pretty well. Anything else that Halsey. You guys, any other highlights besides Halsey?
No.
That's good.
Nope,
the gameplay is pretty generic. I like the missions. I like the same missions you do, Colin, really. I do like Galileo base. I like that map.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense to put stories in there, and I think it suits it. Especially because this game is very scientist heavy. So it makes sense that you'd be setting. I like the idea of setting up bases, supporting these bases, and they're all kind of, you see kind of humanity kind of spread out. It seems very weird that they're not supported very well. This is a military campaign. You're trying to do research and science things under duress. Do you know what mm-hmm. I mean? When you have a large amount of Sangheili fighting you, and, you know what I mean, killing scientists. I mean, these scientists are just idiots, man. I mean, what are they doing?
Yeah. All right. I think we're good. I think, you know, that's a good spot to leave off. Let's do. Is there any more trivia at all, David? And then we do have a community question.
No, I didn't. I didn't look up too much stuff, to be honest. Okay. I looked at Spartan Ops as a whole, and I didn't. I got kind of bits and pieces. I wasn't going to go through mission by mission or try and find anything specific.
Yeah, so. In Halopedia, there's usually maybe one piece of trivia per, but it's usually related to the red versus blue Easter egg.
That's most of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. All right, let's do community, and then we will get out of here.
Woo!
Who's got what up?
I got it up. I love
communities.
All right, you go first. Discord.
You go, Chris.
All right, Colin Perkins on September 10th, 2019 says, are Spartan IVs portrayed fairly in Halo 4, Spartan Ops, ? Parentheses question for mission debrief, -Halo 4, Spartan Ops, missions 1-5, close parentheses. And then UNSC well Brexit said. Just says, no.
Also well said.
Mick Big Daddy Matt says, maybe. Dezudo says, better replay to find out. Elson says, fire team Crimson! Ha ha ha. Impulsive says, I didn't play it.
Oh boy.
Almost as cool, Colin says, the only thing that isn't fair is making Krista suffer by having to play through it again. and then Matt Salvatore says, the Spartan IVs in Spartan Ops were portrayed as kids playing Spartans in dress-up. They are careless and not battle-ready at all. Compare them to the Spartan 4s in Halo 5. There's a huge gap in quality. Osiris team is a capable fire team, while Majestic is not. So I can get behind that. And Boosted just says, that's because Osiris has Buck. Buck is the secret special sauce.
Secret sauce.
And then pretty much everything else is just not worth mentioning. Just a conversation happens after that. But I just like the first comment. Just no. So good.
Thanks for that. Appreciate that input.
Thank you, Discord. You're the best. My favorite.
Nice try,
my
Discord. Boys.
Facebook.
So Facebook has Colin Perkins admin September 10th at 3:18 PM. Our Spartan IVs. Portrayed fairly in Halo 4 Spartan Ops ? Open bracket question for Halo mission brief. Oh, mission for mission brief Halo 4 : Spartan Ops missions 1-5 closed bracket. 8 comments. So what we got are Patrick Jax says, what, those are Spartans? ! I thought they were just Marines in cool looking armor.
Ooh,
understandable. That was a popular response.
Oh, so let me pause you. Remember I mentioned the original Spartan 4 testing program?
Mm-hmm.
The original plan was for them to augment people without needing Mark armor.
Mjolnir
armor, yeah. So that was the original plan. So they could just be enhanced soldiers in fatigues, I guess, without the additional armor needed. Interesting. Interesting tidbit there.
Oh, okay. Wesley Taylor made Taylor. Fine ass name. I don't think they're capable of making the impossible possible, just like Spartan 2s and 3s, like Patrick said, just cool armor. So we're getting kind of the normies of the Spartan world. Which maybe is a little bit unfair.
Bunch of noobs. Yeah.
But that is kind of how they're portrayed, I think. But yeah, anyway. Lucas Fitzer, I feel like they're essentially ODSTs with better armor and some enhancements. Don't get me wrong, ODSTs are badasses, but nothing will compare to Spartan 2s or 3s. Chris kind of says agreed. Part of the makeup of being a Spartan is training from very early on. So we all know 2's got it from 6 years old, 3's got it early teens in most cases, and life experiences and attitudes of 4 is what makes them lower, in my opinion. And that was the same, that's pretty much how Halsey feels about them. So when you have augmented adults, you get kind of very set mentalities of like fully grown adults. So you bring in all the positives with the negatives. Gwen Rodriguez says, yeah, I bet it was a narrative intent to show us to at least discipline Spartans over time and show them become great. I'm curious everyone's thoughts on what we ended up getting instead. And even if we got to see all of Spartan Ops, it would have changed things. In my opinion, I'm glad we got to see Spartan Force portrayed a fair bit better in Halo 5. It's kind of like what we covered. I'm also intrigued by that. I definitely think it would have got better if it was better received. I think we would have seen, I imagine, Majestic get fleshed out more and more. Saw Palmer, and you could definitely, if their plan was Thorn to be a big character in Halo 5, you imagine it was building towards that, and they said clearly it was building into the next game, even if they didn't know exactly what that was back then. But I'm sure they had a good idea, especially because it was all character buildings, and all the content that came out around it was all character building for these same characters. Like we said, pretty much Escalations is season 2 of Spartan Ops.
If you think about it, the Spartan 2s specifically, like, they had years and years and years of training before they got to the point where they're so badass. Whereas, you know, granted, all of these Spartan 4s are military professionals, so they went through that training, but they haven't had really a ton of experience as a Spartan. So it makes sense that they're kind of figuring out, you know, they're learning how to run. You know, I guess they're learning how to walk. They're not yet to the running stage of what that humanity and their peers would expect from a Spartan, the Spartan Force to be. So yeah, I think it's a little unfair to compare them to Spartan 2s and even 3s.
But you're supposed to. Do you know what I mean? Clearly, even like that's what the introduction of this game is supposed to show you, like, what 2s and how they're treated, and they want them put down, and obviously 3s are even a kind of a bigger secret based on their creation, do you know what I mean? Than 2s would be in some ways. Anyway, Chris Lano says exactly what I was going to say. The 4s are watered down Spartans, or essentially ODSTs, cool armor enhancements, not fully made Spartan. It's really about the training. And lastly, Wayne Muller says they seem like JV squad compared to the Spartan 2s. They have badass abilities and they're a little bit cocky. So like I said, you bring in the good with the bad. And again, that's maybe just a bad team that was chosen. Maybe they wanted to give it full of characters and full of flavor, and you get all these different dynamics. But I don't think it worked with Majestic. There is clearly there's a whole bunch of other Spartan teams out there. I can't remember the full complement of Spartan 4s that are on Infinity, but there's a shit ton. So I think maybe just per choice. Do you know what I mean?
I didn't even like Majestic as a fire team name personally.
No,
I
wish not they were really.
Chosen something different.
Majestic, Crimson, no, not really. I mean, they're all mad names. I mean, obviously Shadow's the team we all want to be.
Yeah, exactly.
Imagine being Team Shadow, man. That's badass.
Then there's like Rhino and Taurus and a bunch of other ones. But anyway. I think they did that on purpose, though, right? They showed a bunch of kind of like these cocky guys, and they were supposed to learn along the way, and then by the end of the whole thing, there are these button-up, tight, badass soldiers. That was probably what they were going for.
Definitely, yeah. Obviously, this is their first tour in the Infinity. You were totally brought in at Majestic. You got the flavor that Majestic was new. Well, maybe new as a fireteam, but like some of the characters definitely knew each other before they came on Infinity.
And they don't really even talk about how long these guys have been Spartans. Because doesn't the procedure, I think it takes a couple months.
Yes.
For all the augmentations to take place. Yes. But they don't say specifically. The program is still young. But
I didn't get the impression that this was their very first run as Spartans at Majestic, but obviously their first run on Infinity and maybe together as a fire team as part of the whole Infinity Spartan complex.
Yeah. Yep. Alrighty. I think we are done. That will do it for a debriefing of Spartan Ops episode 1-5 from Halo 4. On the next episode, we'll be covering Spartan Ops episode 6-10. We'll be wrapping up the story. Send us your thoughts at podcastevolved@gmail.com or drop us a tweet at podcastevolved on Twitter. You can also support the show by visiting Podcast Evolved on Patreon. Until next time, evolved.
Evolved. Oh my gosh, that was a long one.